Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Fit for Prosperity podcast. I'm your host, Lucas. Thank you so much for tuning in. For today's episode, I've been talking to Elisa Oh. Elisa is a karate world champion. She's a karate coach and a business coach. And we had a very interesting talk about all the virtues, skills, and mindset that is necessary for peak performance to be a world champion in any sport and how they blend into the business world. Because a lot of the traits and skills and mindset things that you need for peak performance in sports is obviously also what you need for peak performance in business. And so we were talking about how she uses what she has learned as an athlete to enhance her performance as a business person, as a coach, and how you can do that as well. She shared some techniques and tricks that she did, that she shares with her clients. And definitely was a super interesting talk. I learned a lot about high-level performance in business as well as in sports, and they blend very well together. It was a great talk. If you enjoyed as much as I did, please make sure to subscribe to the podcast. It would mean a lot to me. And thank you so much. Enjoy the show. Hello, Elisa. Thank you so much for being on the podcast with me. As usual, no big introduction. I'll let you do that. Just let us know your story briefly. Where do you come from? What you're doing today? And how did you get to be where you are today?
Okay. Well, I was born in Honolulu, Hawaii. Spent most of my early years there. I got into the sport of karate early on in my life, and that became a big passion of mine. I joined the USA national team as a junior up to my adult level, competed internationally, won some pretty cool titles along the way. And that led me to Chicago, where I owned and operated a martial arts business. So I was able to help other students, children, and adults learn the sport and art of karate. And now I'm doing business advising. So using that experience that I learned from owning a business to help other business owners with their entrepreneurial journey. And all the while still doing karate. I love it so much. It'll always be a part of my life.
Awesome. When you get into karate, was it kind of your parents just signed you up as you were a kid? Or did you choose the sport yourself? How did that go?
Yeah, I did not have any influence from my parents when I first wanted to start. I got a flyer from, some sensei, somebody standing outside my school passing out information on karate classes. And I thought it would be really cool. I was 5 years old at the time. Anything sounded like any sport sounded like really exciting. And it just so happened that there was a school right across the street from my house. So it was really convenient for my parents. They thought, why not? And the rest is history. Since I've been in it, my parents have been very encouraging. And my dad even, stopped me from quitting once when I was 9. He encouraged me to keep going. So they've been very supportive, but I was the one who made the choice to get started.
That's cool. Why did you think about quitting back then? Were you already considered a talent at that age? Or how did that go?
No, not at all. I was not a talent. First 4 years of doing karate was just more of a after school activity, just something for me to get moving and enjoy. And I think I was getting bored. I think I just, okay. I maybe wanted to try something else, not sure. And what actually helped me to get really back into karate and really excited about it was that I started competing. So, after that stint where I was kind of bored and wanted to quit, my dad encouraged me to do some competitions, local competitions, but just the idea of competing and, testing everything I've been working on in the dojo, testing it out in a athletic, competition. It really turned me back in, on fire to keep going. And since that day, I've been totally into it.
Oh, that's super cool. And actually, I'd like to follow up a little bit on that because I always feel like competition is also a great motivator when it comes, especially in CrossFit. You see so many people, they're coming in the gym three or four times and then they're actually, that's kind of cool what they're doing at the competition, and go to some weekend competitions and suddenly they train 12 plus hours a week, like besides a full-time job. Is that something that you also translate outside of sport? So try to get that competitor's mindset and competing maybe with friends or someone in terms of your business or other aspects of life?
Oh my gosh, it's so a part of my life. And, you know, people who know I'm really competitive, like even playing board games, Monopoly, like I got to win, you know, in Monopoly. But it's just who I am. I don't know if karate made me that way or I was just that way and I found karate. But, you know, the idea of sports, what I like so much about it is that you really, like what you put into it is what you get out. But it's not a sure thing. So it's like that whole preparation. You have to try hard. You have to give your best in getting ready for an event. But, you know, when it comes down to the day of the event, there's a lot of other factors that go into it. So I like that kind of suspense that you're not exactly sure what could happen. Really great things could happen, or you could have a really bad day or somewhere in between. And when it comes to other aspects of my life, you know, I'm still competitive. On the business front, it was not so much me versus another business. It was more me versus yesterday me, just wanting to do better and be better. Oh.
What just happened?
I don't know.
It's still recording. I always heard you, your camera. Okay. Your camera.
For a little bit, right?
Rose, yeah. And then suddenly the whole app crashed and then it just restarted. But I always heard you talking until the app crashed. I don't know how long the recording was going. I never had that. Fuck.
Okay. I think it just glitched for a second. So maybe you have to edit a little, but I think you'll be okay. You might just have to
edit my
answer.
Yeah, the thing is, I didn't catch the last bit of your answer now. So you were saying that you were always competitive in your business,
right?
As well as you were competing with you yesterday.
Yeah,
And that's kind of where you got, or where I got glitched out, whatever happened.
Okay. So I'll just start from there. Yeah, so even outside of karate, I'm pretty competitive when it comes to businesses, to running my business. It wasn't necessarily me versus another business. It was more me as a business owner versus me yesterday. So always trying to do my best to improve my business and, you know, just reach those successful limits that other larger companies and entrepreneurs are able to achieve. So, you know, I've always been competitive, always wanted to just outdo myself. And even in karate, even though, you know, you're facing another opponent, it really isn't you versus them. It's you versus the, you know, previous you. So if you can become a better athlete, if you can increase your skill and your knowledge and your performance, then you will be champion. It's not really so much the person you're facing in front of you.
That's actually a very interesting point, because in the end, we always say, or like, you're not 100%, or you don't have it 100% inside your control if you're going to be champion, because obviously your opponents also work super hard. And right.
Yep.
And there is always unexpected things that can happen, right? It's even something stupid. You can get injured on the way to get to the fight.
Right.
And then so did you, when you focus, or when you make your goals, do you focus more on the process, or is it actually those external goals? And how do you think that competitiveness kind of or motivates the focus on the external goal, right?
It's a really interesting question. I think by default, we do want results, right? As humans,
yeah,
we want results. Maybe culture makes it that way for us. We think about the champions, the people who achieve, who got the highest level, but we don't think about all the steps that came before that. I'll be honest, a lot of times I do find myself sometimes fixating on the external goal, but I do remind myself all the time that I need to work on the growth goal that's in between those milestones, if you will. So if you've got a you have certain milestones you want to hit, like in sport, if you want to make a national team, which is going to make you a world champion, Olympic champion, then those are external, you know, milestones. But in between those milestones, you've got to do something. You've got to see growth and realize that growth within you. So that's really what you got to focus on. So I do remind myself, because it's very easy to start fixating on those externals. But I do remind myself that it's that work in between that really matters, that making sure that you're making that progress every single day. And then when you're in the moment, when, like, for example, if you're in a competition, you have to, like, the greatest athletes, they're always focused on what they can do and not what others can do. So, you know, you can control the controllables. Everything else, you just got to let it go. Mm-hmm. And it's way easier said than done, but it's just something you constantly work at. You work at letting go of what you can't control and focusing on what you can.
And I think that's also something that translates very well into business on what you're doing right now.
Absolutely.
You don't have full control even if things go well or badly. I think always unexpected things can happen, right?
Right. The pandemic has taught us that in a very extreme way, is that we don't have control, you know, no matter, depending on where you were in the world, you know, shops, economies were shut down. You couldn't go into certain businesses. Businesses were forced to pivot, to change their model. These are all things that we had no control over.
Exactly.
But business owners were able to figure out, okay, what can I control? What is something I can control? And just getting really, really good at that. And there's, you've seen a ton of innovation. You've seen a ton of people just thinking outside the box and coming up with really cool solutions that I don't think we as a society want to get rid of after this pandemic is over, you know, hopefully, that we're gonna like that innovation that came out of it.
Yeah, definitely. I think like with every bad time, it forces innovation and will end up giving us positive things that stick around, right?
Totally.
So to get back into that goal setting process, because I think that's just super important in business, in sports as well. Do you kind of have a process of how you view, if you had like your big milestone goal, like for example, being a world champion, how you went all the way to break that down into smaller goals, all the way down into daily activities that you would be doing, like, or how does your process of goal setting look like?
Yeah, I'm happy to share about that. You've got your lifetime vision or these major milestones that you want to achieve in life. Sometimes they're actual events, like, you know, a world championship. And sometimes there's not really a time when you want it to happen, but you want it to happen. Like you want your business to achieve, you know, $1 million. Regardless of that, we can't just fixate on just that every day, wake up and say, I'm gonna hit $1 million. I'm gonna hit $1 million. We need to figure out how to get there. It's like if I was your navigator, if I was in the car with you, and you know, I'm in the passenger seat, and you're driving, and you're saying, I want to get to, you know, X destination, and I'll say, yeah, just go. I mean, that doesn't help you at all. I have to pull up Google Maps or pull up something and figure out, you know, which turn you need to take, which highways and so forth, and help you get there. Or Siri has to help you, you know, like, but somebody has to help you get there. And so that's how I kind of break down my goals. It's like, I look at where I want to be. I want to make sure that that's important to me and that that's going to motivate me every day to go for it. If it's not that important to me, I'm going to lose my steam and I'm going to lose that motivation along the way, and it's not going to happen. So first of all, make sure that goal is truly important to you and not just important to like your parents or, you know, your friends or people around you. So once you know what that is, then it's kind of like, you know, reverse engineering the whole thing, like watching like a Rocky montage, like watch it in reverse. What are some of like the really cool things that happen along the way to get to that point? So think about, imagine what are some of the major steps that have to happen in order for you to get there. Sometimes that path is really clear. Sometimes it's a little messy. You're not exactly sure how you're going to get there. So, you know, you can think of different pathways, different options, but at the end of the day, I think it's important to settle on one that's going to be your strategy. So maybe you have three really good ideas on how to get to your endpoint, but pick one. That's the first choice strategy. We're going to go with this strategy and we're going to go this path. So you've got like your major like checkpoints, if you will, to get to that final destination. And then, like I said, in between is all like that little stuff, right? So then you have to go like one level deeper. And so with the example of karate, you know, with world champion, first you got to be on the national team. I guess you got to win a couple of events just to get to the world championships. So there's those things. But what happens in between? Well, for an athlete, it's the daily training. Like you have to train every day. You have to build up, get your conditioning up, practice some test matches to make sure that you know how to like work your techniques in the ring. A lot of repetition, a lot of work in the gym. So from there, once you know what those like mini goals are, what are the daily activities that have to happen to get you there? So that's where an athlete or a business person starts writing down those smaller daily activities. And in the business world, a lot of people like refer to them as KPIs, those key performance indicators. What are those small, like daily things? Like what's our monthly revenue? What's our average sale? What is, how many products are we selling per month? These are the kind of things that business owners are looking at because it's part of a larger plan. Just like with an athlete, like, you know, how many reps of a certain technique am I doing? How much weight am I lifting? What's my VO2 max today? Things like that. So everyone who has a goal, whether it's an entrepreneur or an athlete, it's the same thing. It's big macro goals, micro goals, and then those KPIs or those like daily indicators or activities that lead you there.
That's cool. Yeah, it's a long process to break it all apart, but I think very crucial, right?
Right.
I want to get back to one of the first things you said, and that's like the importance, that the why. If you have a client that comes to you for business coaching in that sense, how do you help them discover that or actually make sure that the goal they're chasing is really the one that matters to them?
Oh my gosh, that's such a good question, because I will always have clients come to me and like the first one or two times I meet them, I ask them what's their vision, what's their goal, and they, without, you know, like 9 out of 10 times, they'll pull out some round number like $1 million, $5 million, $10 million. I want a $10 million company. And then I just ask, well, why? You know, why is that important? Oh, because, you know, it just makes me feel good that I got to 1 million. Like that would really make me feel good to get to 1 million. And then, so I think of it as almost like an onion. I have to slowly peel the layers away. I can't just like get to the real why in one shot. I've got to keep asking them, okay, well, 1 million sounds like a nice round, even number. So what does that actually translate to money in your pocket? So then I have I get them to start thinking about, okay, with all my expenses. Yeah. Actually, if I'm making $1 million, I think I'm only bringing home $50,000. Okay. Is that enough? Is that important to you? Let's talk about your lifestyle. Let's talk about what's important to you in life and what you want to achieve by being an entrepreneur. So really start to break it down to what it means to them. And then when I feel like I've gotten to the real why is when I get to what's truly important to them. So we get really like, in order for them to have the lifestyle that they want, what do they need? Sometimes it's not even money. Sometimes it's time. They just need more time, time to be with their family, time to travel, time to do other things. So we get back to the why, and then we build it back up to what revenue is. And maybe revenue is like, 500,000, that's all they need. And they can have the lifestyle they want. They can have the time with their family. They can do all the things they want. And it's not such a sexy number, but it's what's important to them. So it takes a lot of digging and just asking the question why a lot of times, but in different ways to get to what's important. And that's how I, as a business coach, help help entrepreneurs really figure out their goals. And then from there, then we get to work and we work on building the roadmap.
Yeah, I think you touched on something super important there, that sometimes it's not even the amount of money, right? So their actual goal might, they want to spend more time with the family, was your example, right? So if they chase a 10 million business, they maybe sacrifice all the time with their family. And when they finally arrive there, their wife has left them, the kids are with their ex-wife, and they realize, fuck, what I actually would do, I have my 10 million business, but that's not anything that I really want to. And that's kind of, I think, a terrible experience. So very important to
with humans, don't get that. Look, sometimes we have to make that mistake a couple times to figure it out. So it's always good to have an advisor, someone to help you think that through, because we'll make that mistake. Like we just will, because we're, you know, competitive, ambitious, whatever you want to call it. But we're trying to chase that, you know, thing that society tells us we should be chasing.
Yeah, which is often not really what we actually want. So we had a couple points now, the competitiveness that you get from sport and the goal setting that sports really helped you to develop, to be more successful now in business. Are there any other virtues and things that you learned from your career as an athlete that translate way well into business? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, totally. Grit, you know, like I like to use the word grit because it's like, it's not just working hard, but it's like working hard with intentionality. Like you're actually doing the right things. You're doing the hard things that actually matter. You're not just being busy. A lot of people like to be busy because then they feel like they're being productive, but you have to do the things that actually matter that usually suck. You don't want to do them. but you do them anyway, because you know that that's what makes a difference. So there's that. And I think the talent and all that stuff is really much less important than that one virtue, if you will. It's just being able to do the things that you don't want to do that are hard, but you know that it's going to pay off.
If there's a day where you feel like super uninspired or just find yourself procrastinating and, you know, I should do those important things, what are kind of your ways to get back and get that grit back and start working?
Yeah, I'm not perfect. Like I will have those days. I just know that I'm going to have them. So I think that's the first thing, is giving yourself a break, knowing that you're not a machine. And that you will have those days. But if you're gonna have those days, like have the day, you know, like really have the day. Like if you're gonna chill out and not work and, you know, go do something like different, then really enjoy it, like soak it up, because the next day you've gotta be back on. You gotta turn it on. You can't turn one day into 1 week, into 1 month. I think that's the mistake. It's not that you take one day off, it's that you make it a habit of procrastinating and putting things and, you know, and being lazy. So nothing wrong with having a bad day, just get back on the horse the next day. When I have those bad days, if I can turn around the same day, awesome, I'll do it. And if I need to wait till the next day, no problem too. But the way I get back on, is like, I'll start with a good workout, you know, like just exercise and movement always makes a world of difference. So if I can get a good sweat in and work out, I usually feel a lot better about the day ahead. Not necessarily an early morning exerciser. Training for competition, usually I have like two workouts a day, so I do inevitably work out early in the morning. But if I had to choose, I prefer to work out in the afternoon. I just feel more active then. But if I know I need like a kick in the butt, I'll do a morning workout, because I just know that I'll feel so much better after that.
So basically, when you get up and you try to start working and you just feel super uninspired, you're like, oh well, I guess I leave that for now, get into the gym and start and get my workout in instead of in the afternoon, and then go back and see how it goes. And if it still doesn't work, then you're like, okay, I might as well take the day off instead of wasting it at the office doing nothing. Or do you try to fight through?
It depends what I have on my calendar. So if I have accountability where I have to meet with clients or other people, then I'll suck it up. Like, and I'll just do it.
Well, then you have no choice, right?
Yeah, I have no choice. I'm not going to cancel on someone because I'm not in the mood. Like, I just think that's such a cop-out. I don't like when people do that. Like, if it's not just because you don't feel like it. If you have a pretty light day ahead of you, maybe you're supposed to be doing, like, I don't know, writing or something, mm-hmm. you're just feeling so uninspired. Okay, fine. Like, you know, as long as you move that block of work to another part of your week, okay, if you have that time, you can do that. But if you have to meet somebody and you're going to make an excuse not to meet them because you're just not up to it, for me, that's unacceptable. Like, I just feel really accountable to other people. So I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, but then at least for me, I find myself struggling with procrastination here and there. And mm-hmm. but it's always when I have that light work, you know, I'm supposed to write some texts and I'm just like, I don't know what I should be writing and, mm-hmm. You know, and right. then I kind of waste the whole day. And at the end of the day, I'm like, I haven't done much. But if I have the day full of meetings and calls and stuff and client work, then it's very easy to be focused. And I'm like, because I also enjoy that much more. I'm like, oh, it's cool interacting with people. So I guess.
Yeah, well, some people find energy from talking to other people. Other people actually find it draining. That's the part they dislike. They like to be, you know, alone and introverted in their head. So you have to, like, I guess, be honest with who you are, right? Know what your strengths and weaknesses are. Know what brings you energy and what sucks energy. And that's another thing too. You can put the things that are harder for you. They suck a little bit more energy from you. You can put them at times of the day where you're most likely to just say, you know what, I'm doing it. I don't care. I'm doing it. So for me, it's like 9 a.m. to 12 or 1 p.m. If it's a hard thing, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to make it happen. But if you put it between like 1 and 3 p.m. for me, it's like siesta time. I don't want to do it. Like, I'll push it off. So I kind of do that. Like, I'll put client meetings at 1 to 3 p.m. because I know I like meeting with clients. It's easy. Like, I like that. But I'm not going to like put writing, you know, from 1 to 3 because I'll just push it off. I know I'll procrastinate.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Like, knowing yourself and then plan the day accordingly. I'm wondering here, as an athlete, how was that? I mean, you obviously enjoyed training. But as you were training twice a day, I think you had much less wiggle room in planning your day out, right? Because you cannot just do both workouts in the morning. That just doesn't work, probably. How did you go about it then? Like, because you probably had to do some things at the 1 to 3 p.m. slot, because that was probably when you physically recovered.
right. Yeah, it was hard. I mean, I'm not going to say it wasn't something that was sustainable for a very long time. Actually, COVID helped. I was able to work from mm-hmm. home. I was able to train near home or at home. So I was able to, you know, work my schedule in a way that it wasn't a lot of transportation and traveling back and forth. So that's one thing. I just had to stick to my calendar and use my calendar as mm-hmm. a tool. So I set, you know, I'm all into like organization and color. So I'll set my work schedule, like things that I have to do. There's no negotiating. I'll set that on my calendar in a certain color. Then for me, the second priority was the training. So then I put the training, like the must, I have to do these trainings, and I put those on my calendar. And then all the other like third tier things were like things with work that had wiggle room. Like I could do it when I needed to, not at a specific time, then I would fit those in. And then I think the most important part to that is not to overbook yourself. So you can't put block by block by block, you know, from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. It's just not sustainable. So making sure you have lots of time in between to relax, be with, you know, kids, family, sleep is super important. So you know, it's, you can say you're organized, you can use your calendar, but if you're not realistic with your calendar, it doesn't work for you. So just, you know, using the calendar to fit priorities, but also give myself enough time to rest and recover in between.
Well, that's also something that I'm super intrigued now, that you say rest and recovery. Obviously, as an athlete, it's super crucial. You need to sleep enough. Was there anything, nighttime rituals or anything that you have been doing to make sure that you get enough sleep in?
I've never had a trouble falling asleep like in my whole life. I think that's because I'm active though. Like I just, I work, I move all day. And then once my head hits the pillow, I'm out. Like I'm out in less than 5 minutes. I wake up at a pretty decent time, like usually between like 5 and 6:30 AM. So, you know, like by the time 9, 10, 10:30 hits, I'm really tired and I have to go to sleep. So going to sleep is not a problem for me. Yeah, I just make sure that I guess the one thing I do is I stop like really difficult tasks, super hard workouts or working. I stop all of that by like 6 o'clock so that I have those few hours before bed to just kind of relax, have a nice dinner, you know, relax, that kind of thing.
Okay. So that was just something that came natural to you. You're not the one that was binging Netflix instead of sleeping.
In COVID, yeah, I definitely got onto some of those shows and stuff, but I didn't watch them at night. Like I just, like my body just wants to sleep at night. Like I'll watch it, you know, on the weekend when I have nothing to do, but I'm not watching it late into the night because my body needs to sleep.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
I guess that helps. So I would like to get back into karate because I think there is some values that are super important in karate. You probably can tell me more about those, but what I understand is like discipline and then being receptive to criticism from a master, or you call them master too? Probably, right?
Master, sensei, yeah. It's sensei, different. And
maybe there are others too that are almost cultural values in karate, probably.
Sure.
Were there some, and have they influenced your business journey as well in a positive way? What we say there?
Yeah, that's such a good question. There's so much. So, you know, karate, as people may know, is not just a sport. It actually comes from it's a martial art. So if we break that down, it's an art, right? And, you know, if people know about Eastern culture, it's a little different than the West, in that, like, there's a lot of, like, idea of like meditation or moving meditation. And I think karate can be described sometimes as moving meditation. Like, for example, if you watch someone do kata, that's the forms. And that's not something I'm a specialist in, although I really like to do it. But I like kata in that it trains your mind to just be present. Like you can't do kata if you're not present. If you're thinking about something else, I think literally can't do the kata because you'll forget where you are in the sequence and you'll mess up. So it's similar to other sports like maybe gymnastics or figure skating in that you have to be completely present. If you're not present, you're totally gonna mess up. And so years of karate training that had kata as part of the training, I think helped me to have a really good understanding of moving meditation. So being able to move my body, but being present, being in the moment, not thinking about outside things and things going on, you know, in the future or in the past, has really helped me. I just, you know, just having that practice of being present, I think is a big thing in today's really busy society. So that's one thing. There's so many more, but I guess some of the other bigger ones, respect. Respect's a big thing in karate. You know, it comes from Japan. So as people know, in Japan and other Eastern countries, people bow. It's more common than like a handshake. And there's that, just the idea of like, you imagine yourself bowing, it's, you definitely are showing respect to the person, you're lowering your head. So it's that humbleness, right? Like you're saying like, yes, I see you and I respect you. And just the idea of bowing in karate and bowing to your opponent before you fight them. I mean, that's just what makes it different than other combat sports. Like, yes, I'm going to try my best to beat you, but I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not going to try to, you know, I'm not trying to do anything malicious. I'm just trying to, you know, show my skill and, you know, and it's almost like I want to play chess with you, but in a physical way. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I really like about karate. And that's, those things carry over to my, outside my karate life in so many ways. Like I can't even imagine I would be a completely different person without karate. I mean, hopefully still be a pretty good person, but I would be a different person. Like, it's just like the respect, the humility, just the moving meditation, that whole thing that I mentioned in the beginning, just all of that has just really formed me as a person. As other things have in life, but because karate is such a big part of my life, it's definitely influenced me in so many ways.
Yeah, and that's definitely some values and virtues that are super valuable, like not only for business, but just for being a good human being and like dealing with your family, friends, and strangers even.
Right. Yeah, that's a good example. Like I always like, you know, if someone's on whatever, like on the, if I'm walking near someone on the street or something, it's always like being aware of other people, like simple things like holding the door open for someone when they pass through. It's things like that. Just understanding like other person's perspective and being like, oh, they might need some help, so I'm going to hold the door open for them. Mm-hmm. It's stuff like that, that I'm sure like people learn without doing karate. I'm not saying that you need karate to know those things, but karate has definitely helped me with that.
Yeah, I can imagine, because you like kind of have to train it every day. You get like trained into developing an eye and an awareness of those situations. And then you're just much more aware than someone who is not, but there's obviously probably different ways you can also learn that.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's lots of different ways to learn these things in life. And a lot of times it's through sports. Sometimes it's not. For me, it just happened to be karate.
So getting into something different that we maybe have been touching on a little bit before, it is failure, right? So you, as an athlete, you obviously also set those external goals like winning a world championship that are not fully inside our control. And therefore, it obviously can happen that we don't achieve them. Following your journey or reading through your Instagram, I've seen you didn't qualify for the Olympics this year, which was the first time that the karate was at the Olympics, right?
Right.
And I would assume that was a huge goal for you as an athlete, and maybe also your last goal, because you told me that you stopped being a competitive athlete now. Mm-hmm. Was that hard for you to deal with? And do you think karate education has prepared you well, or just your way as an athlete has prepared you well? And how do you deal with failure?
Yeah, it was hard. It was really hard. You know, I was a little kid wanting to be an Olympian, and I learned early on that the sport that I loved wasn't in the Olympics. And that was surprising to me as a 10-year-old. You find out, oh, wait, what? Karate's not in the Olympics? But I loved it so much that I just stuck with it. And I didn't matter to me. I just wanted to be the best I could be. Mm-hmm. I realized, oh, there, I found out there's a world championship. Okay, I'll go do that, you know? And so I'll
be cool too. Yeah.
But so I was done with karate, done. And then I found out that it was going to be in the 2020 Tokyo Games. And I had been out for years. So when I decided to come back, it had been 7.5 years since I had done a competition. It was a long time to be out. I had two kids. I was moved on. Like I was in coach mode already for years. And I decided to go back as an athlete. So that was a huge risk, but I knew myself. I knew that if I sat by and watched others try, that I would just be resentful the whole time. And, you know, I knew that I had to give it my best shot, even though, you know, I wasn't in my athletic prime at that time. No one is after 7.5 years of being out and, you know, just older in general. So, so that was a big risk. And there was always a chance, but it was a very small chance, you know? And so when it didn't happen and I got as close as I could about qualifying, like I was the American athlete who had a chance in my weight class. Of course, there's one person in my weight class who had a chance at the Olympics and it was me. So that's pretty cool. But that doesn't count. Like you still didn't make it, you know? So it was really disappointing when, you know, that final cut happened when I didn't qualify in Paris. It was really disappointing. I was of course sad, like of course, like anyone would be, like all that training, everything. And I didn't make it. But what I think is, as an older, at that time, I had just turned 40, which is crazy, like to think that I was still competing at 40. But as a 40-year-old who has, you know, had life experience, I think, and years of karate training, I think after that brief period of grief, like, you know, that, you know, I'm sad, I didn't make it, blah, blah, blah. I think I was able to reflect and say, you know what? I gave it my best. And what did I learn from the experience? What were some of the things that I can take away with me? Or, you know, moving ahead in life, it's not going to be competing, but it's going to be in other ways and so forth. And so to answer your question, yeah, like it's hard to do, to accept failure, but if you can find time to reflect, there's so much growing and learning to come out of it. And so like same could happen in business. Like you will fail as a business person. I do not know one business owner who has never failed. Like every single business owner has failed multiple times. And the idea is that you learn when you fail. So if your first business fails, you learn why it failed. Okay, try again. That business fails, you learn why it failed. And eventually you will figure it out. You'll crack the code. So that's where karate really gives, you know, or sports give people that that leg up on, you know, on becoming an entrepreneur, because you learn how to fail. You learn how to accept things that were out of your control. Like you accept that you tried your best, you gave it all you could and you still didn't make it. Okay, what's the learning? What are the things that you gained from the experience, from the road to that journey, and what can you use for your next goal?
So what I hear out of it is kind of first learn accepting the fact that it might have not been you have been doing your best, so, and it still wasn't enough. That's just something we have to accept. And then kind of reframe the whole thing from, that was not a failure. I actually worked hard. I did well. And I have X, Y, and Z that I learned. And I'll take that with me and kind of make the whole experience, like reframe it in your mind to something positive instead of a failure. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's about right. I mean, and, you know, and of course, accepting that it accept the reality. Yeah, I failed at the external goal that I wanted. I did not make it to the Olympics. I'm not going to like be in a fairyland and say, oh no, but I'm a winner anyway. Like, no, no, that's not what I'm saying, but accept that part, but turn it into a positive, like you said, for the next step, for the next goal.
Yeah. So as you said, when this happened, you were already almost 40, so very experienced. You probably in your career have been going through a lot of failure. When you were younger, was that any different? Did you find it harder to deal with it when you were younger without the experience? Or did you not fail then?
No. I mean, I was, okay, so I come from a in Hawaii, there's a lot of martial arts and mm-hmm. good martial arts. I would say in the US, some of the best martial artists come from Hawaii. And so I had a great competition in that small little state in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. We had some amazing competition. And I, like, you know, I have two childhood friends that were the same age as me who did karate, and I was always third place. Like, I was always coming in second or third place. I was not the best girl. Mm-hmm. So I learned at a very early age how to deal with failure. I just wasn't as good as them, you know, but I think that's where my senseis and my parents really helped mold me, because they really helped me analyze why I lost. Okay, you lost because, like, you didn't, like, you know, use your kicks, or you didn't do this, you know? And so just helping me to turn every failure into a learning opportunity. I thank my parents and my sensei so much for that, because that was the huge lesson. Mm-hmm. Like, I could have, you know, 20 more trophies from my early years, but that wouldn't teach me anything. Like, what I really remember is those conversations with my dad or with my sensei after the tournament, on how I can do better for next time.
Yeah, and probably that experience, like, first what you learned from all those lost fights, and also the mental progress that you made from dealing with failure, was then mm-hmm. eventually what allowed you to win a world championship later. So maybe if you would have won as a kid everything, you might have not been going so far later on in your life.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, you know, people who didn't come up with me in Hawaii, like, maybe, you know, other people in the US or outside and internationally who watched me from a early age, like 14, 15 competing, they probably don't even know that, because by the time I was 14 and going to the junior world championships, I was winning. And they probably thought, like, I was always a winner from day one. And that couldn't be further from the truth. Like, I was always the underdog. From the time I was 9 years old, I was the underdog, but I didn't quit and I kept going, and I don't owe that all to myself. I owe it to my support. So thanks for them.
That's awesome. Then we can get into now, I guess, a little bit deeper into a single fight. And that's, if you want to win a fight, I mean, you have to be incredibly focused. You already said it with the forms that you're doing. They were kata, were they called, right?
Yeah, kata.
But I think in a fight that's even more extreme, because you have the outside influence from an opponent who might hit you, which might hurt. So there's a much higher level of stress, but still it's super important to be 100% focused and be in that flow state, how we call it, right? I think high level athletes are probably the best people to ask that, because they're super good of getting themselves into the flow state on command, mm-hmm. because they know it's on now. I have to win this round in 3 minutes, or I have to score that one shot, that one penalty, whatever sport mm-hmm. it is. And I think most athletes have a routine that actually gets them into the zone. Do you have that, and how does it look like?
Yeah, I definitely have a routine. So I wake up, and I always wake up every morning, day of competition. I'm nervous, and I accept that. And I know, like, that's a good thing. That means I care. And that means that this competition is important to me. And so what I do is, throughout the day, you know, let's say I'm competing at midday, at noon, as I'm, like, in the hotel, and I'm making my way to the venue, and I'm in the warm-up area, like, I'm getting nervous. I'm getting feelings. And what I actually visually imagine is, like, collecting those feelings, and I, like, collecting it into you know, just like this concentration of emotions. And so, you know, I'm like inserting emotions into the bank, like nervousness, excitement, you know, focus, whatever you want to, like, all those different emotions. I'm just collecting them along the way. I'll definitely do some visualization before I leave my hotel room, because it's quiet there. No one's bothering me. I can, like, really, like, visualize exactly the way I want the competition to go. And then once I get to the venue, usually, like, very much to myself, like, you know, most athletes will put their headphones on and stuff. They won't be you know, talking a ton to their teammates. That's me. I'm very much to myself once I get to the competition. And then I'm warming up the same way. I try to keep my warmups pretty consistent because then I feel like I'm into this, I'm not thinking anymore. I'm just doing, you know, I'm just letting muscle memory kick in. That way I can just kind of get into this zone, if you will, or this flow state. Like that's how I do it. I do it by just doing the mechanics, just doing the routine. And then going back to that first thing I said about that, all those emotions. So mm-hmm. now I'm like right about to step on the mat for my first match. And what I actually physically try to think about, I think about exhaling all those emotions in one like really strong breath out or exhale. And then I just feel like you had all that nervousness, all those like fears and stuff, and you just breathe it out one time hard and then it's gone. And then you're like, well, what's left? Like warrior mode. I'm ready. There's nothing left. There's no fear. There's no anxiety. None of that stuff. It's all gone. I'm ready to go. So I actually accept those weird, bad feelings, if you will. And then I just let it out one time. And once I physically exhale and let it out, I know I'm ready to go. So I've done my visualization. I've done my warm-up routine. I've done that big exhale. And now I'm ready to fight.
That's cool. What I love about it is that your routine actually begins the very second you stand up, and you kind of have the whole competition day mapped out to be in that very specific second in the zone.
Yeah.
I think that what that tells us is you cannot really get there in a couple of minutes. That has to be like a longer process, right?
Totally. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, you know, what we watch on TV, we see maybe the athlete hits himself in the face and then they go, that's not all they do. Like they weren't just relaxing until that moment, doing like whatever, you know, random things. And then once they hit themselves in the face, they're ready to go. That's not it. Like that's maybe their final ritual. That's their last thing. Like that's equivalent to me, like doing the breathe out, you know, it's that last thing that's like, yes, now I'm ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Michael Phelps. He is always doing the exact same moves once he's
yes.
about to jump into the pool right before the race
yes.
starts. But I know with him, it's also like he has everything mapped out. Like on even what he eats is the same every single competition day.
Right.
It's like into the detail through the whole day, everything mapped out. So that's
yeah, that's cool. I heard about that. I heard of how detailed he is about his routine. That's really cool.
But one thing now I think that can happen, especially if you're in martial arts, right? You get hit, something hurts, or you might even do a mistake, like mm-hmm. not having your cover up and get hit because of that. I would assume that that can kind of bog you and get you out of that flow state, right?
Totally.
What do you do to refocus quickly in that situation? Because if you stay with a mistake, you'll lose the fight, right?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And that happens all the time in a sport like mine, is that you get scored on pretty hard. You get knocked really, you know, knocked on your butt and everything. And, or, you know, someone scores like a really amazing point on you. It can easily turn the tides. And I think if you just like, if you have some kind of a mantra or something that you say to yourself to reset, and you could say it in your head or you could physically say it out loud. It's up to you, but just having that reset button, I think is really, really important. And so for me, it's just one point, just get one point. So, you know, it doesn't matter what happens in the match, just get one point. And then that's what that helps me to focus on the next move and not what just happened to me. So if I just got kicked in the face, you know, opponent scores a big point, just get one point. Now I'm focused on me getting one point and not on like, oh shoot, I just got kicked in the head. What if I get kicked in the head again? Oh my gosh, like I'm doomed, you know? So that's how I do it.
Awesome. Yeah. And that brings us back to like getting into the moment and being super present, because you're not mm-hmm. thinking about what just happened. Even if it was just 5 seconds ago, you're literally like, my fight's right now and I got to score one point now, and then we see it from there, right?
Right. Right.
So Now we have talked a lot about the flow state in a fight or in sports in general, but mm-hmm. I'd assume it's also important in business to actually, when you're doing work, get yourself into the flow state. Do you have a similar routine there? Or, I mean, can it even be possible to be in a flow state for such a prolonged amount of time, like a work day? Do you pick mm-hmm. yourself like some tasks? I'm like, those ones I really need to be focused and kind of hype yourself up for those. So how do you handle this in business?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I didn't think about it, but when you asked the question, I realized that, for example, when I meet with clients, I always have a routine for preparing to meet with clients. So, I review last week's agenda. I build this week's agenda for what we're going to talk about in the meeting. There's like certain things I do in my notes to mentally prepare me for the meeting ahead. So I guess in that sense, I'm preparing for a meeting with a client just the same as I would for a competition, just like at a less intense level. And one thing I do, I think it's so important to be good at business advising is to listen well. And so I think that I would consider myself a pretty good listener. I don't get easily distracted by, you know, emails, notifications, or just thoughts in my own head. I feel like I do a fairly decent job of listening to the person I'm talking to. And I think that it comes from something, and it might be from karate. I'm not sure, but I think that's kind of listening well and being in the moment, I think, are kind of go hand in hand, right? They're very similar in that you have to be present to listen well. You can't be thinking about what you got, you know, in 2 hours or what you did yesterday over the weekend when you're listening to somebody. You have mm-hmm. to really be present. So that the preparation for client meetings and listening well, I think, are two things that I've taken from sport and translated over.
That's cool. So I think we have covered a lot, especially about peak performance in sports and how it translates mm-hmm. into business. So that's super cool. But there's one last thing that may be a little bit off topic that I'm just curious mm-hmm. about, mm-hmm. because I'm super into fitness, obviously. And mm-hmm. as an ex-athlete or still athlete, maybe in a way, you're definitely doing a lot of fitness and you're keeping yourself probably super fit. So how does your training look like right now? What do you do? Do you still do karate? Do you hit the gym?
Right.
Yeah.
So actually, I'm not 100% retired. there's the world championships at the end of this year in Dubai, and I would like to finish with that championship. And so that will be my farewell championship, is doing the world championships in a couple of months. So I'm training for that. And I'm training for that just the same as I was before. But what I will say is that once Dubai is over, and I have retired from competition before, so I can tell you from experience that I get bored very quickly and I need a challenge. So I'm actually actively looking for something I can do in my 40s and 50s and be competitive at, because I know I need that. I'm not going to be the girl that, you know, takes a group class. There's nothing against group classes. It's just not for me. Like mm-hmm. I'm not going to be that person. Nor am I going to be the person that just goes off for a run every day by themselves. Like I need action and I need competitiveness. Like I need something. So I'm trying to look for a sport that's healthy for 40 and 50 year olds, and where I can actually like test it. So I've been thinking about maybe, I don't know, like rowing or I don't know, triathlon or something. I'm still like, you know, experimenting and seeing what I like.
CrossFit.
You think so? Do you think it's okay for older people though?
I mean, at the CrossFit games, they go up to like the 70s. There were like 75 year old competing.
They have age groups.
Yeah, they have age groups. So there are like a range of master categories. I think like every five, I don't know exactly, but I think like always in 5 year steps, they are grouped into one age group. So it exists.
Maybe. I think that would actually be a really, really fun transition. So yeah, maybe I'll give CrossFit a try for a little bit and see if it's something that I like. But I love doing those exercises anyway. I love how it tests your limits. that's I like that a lot. So it might be a good fit.
Might be a good fit.
Yeah.
And then another kind of a little bit off topic question. I'm sure you've also been reading a lot of books. So which is a book that you maybe have gifted a lot, or just your favorite book, one book that you would share with me and the listeners?
It's very sports oriented, but I think it's a really good book is Relentless by Tim Grover.
I think I know
it. He's the trainer for Michael Jordan.
Oh no, that is not. He was Michael Jordan's
physical trainer. He's amazing. I like is it Angela Duckworth? Grit. That's another one that I like as well. I could give you a whole reading list of things, but I'm sure most of them you guys have read as well. Like, you know, more business oriented books as well that are just amazing. Even if it's just. I do a lot of audiobooks just because, like, mm-hmm. I'm working out. I want to be listening. I want to be like doing double duty, or driving, you know, to pick up my kids or something. So I do a lot of audiobooks, but I read as well. But I'm always looking for those kind of business mindset type books. They really inspire me.
Awesome.
And podcasts too.
I like the business mindset kind of books too. I've been reading a lot of them, and they're inspiring, but then at some point I'm like kind of repetitive, you know.
Right.
But it always keeps the motivation up, like just refocus or get re-inspired by anyone.
Exactly. Yep, exactly. You just need to hear it sometimes. A lot of times the stuff you already know, but you just need to hear it. But the ones I really like are the ones that have a methodology that maybe I didn't think about. So when something has like a really good methodology, then I'm like, okay, I can actually apply this. I like this. Let me give this a try. So those are my favorite ones.
Yeah, definitely. If they give you actionables and like you can do this and this on a daily basis, and it will help you with focus, it will help you with motivation, whatever it is. That's like totally. Where you find value in.
Yep, absolutely.
Awesome. So I think that's about it. Thank you so much for sharing all the knowledge. If people want to reach out to you, maybe they need a good business coach or just to network or connect with you, where can they find you?
Yeah. I hang out the most on Instagram. So at Elisa Al Karate is where I'm at. I'm on LinkedIn a little bit, more for like the business side of things, but you can definitely find me on Instagram. It's where I prefer to be.
Awesome. Will it still be called Karate once the world championship is over?
I'm sorry?
Will it still be Elisa Au Karate once you're actually retired again?
You know what? Oh, it's such a part of me. I don't know. I have to consult with like a personal brand person to see if that's important. Like, I don't know. I didn't think about that. But karate is part of my life. So I think it will stay.
I mean, and you still have your school, right? So
I've exited the business, but I'm still very much part of karate, like in coaching athletes and so forth. Exactly. So yeah, it's part of who I am. Yep.
I don't think karate will ever leave your life completely. So
no, unfortunately not.
So it will fit even in 10 years or 20 years. So
yeah, that's true.
Awesome. So yeah. Thank you so much. Definitely was very inspiring and learned a lot. So
thank you.
Good actionables that you shared. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening, my friends. If you enjoyed the show, please make sure to subscribe to the podcast. It would really mean a lot to me. And give me some feedback. Let me know what you liked and what you didn't like. I always try to make this show better, bring you the best possible podcast. Thank you so much. And also, I would be happy if you follow me on Instagram at pt.lucas and reach out to me if you have any questions or if you have some guests that you would like to hear interviewed. I'd love that. Thank you so much and have a great day. Talk to you soon.